Welcome to Season 12 of Digital Learning Radio. I'm Laura, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Catherine.
Hello.
And this season of the podcast, we're continuing the conversations of sharing what is inspiring us on our ongoing story of learning. This week, we'll turn it over to Catherine to share what's been inspiring her.
I'm ready. But first, I'm still thinking back to last week's episode when you shared the 7 essential coaching questions. I know that as your now what, you were considering creating a handy cheat sheet to have those 7 questions visible, along with continuing your own shift in language to use some of these questions in your own conversations. So, Laura, how's it going? And did you have the opportunity to put any of that into practice?
Well, Catherine, I'm so glad you asked because yes, I have. First, I added the questions to a pinned Google Keep note. So anytime I open the app or the site, it's one of the first things I see, plus really handy to access. Nice. But I did take it a step further, and I actually did add the questions to this tiny sticky note that lives on my laptop below the keyboard.
Nice.
And this has proven to be more impactful than expected, actually. So in looking at this every day, I've kind of added some of these questions to my own reflective thinking process. So, for example, this week it's been questions 3 and 4, which are what's the real challenge here for you and what do you want, that have been speaking to me and helping me kind of get to the root cause of a few things I'm working on and problem solving. So, that's a bonus. Also, I've had a few people ask, what is that tiny sticky note on your computer? And so I've gotten to organically share those 7 questions, which is fun. And then finally, another unexpected bonus to having the sticky on my laptop is visibility during a conversation. So like a lot of people, I have the habit of closing my laptop screen to about like a 30-degree angle whenever someone asks me a question or if I'm having a conversation to signal that I'm tuned in and listening. And it also keeps me from wanting to have my eyes dart over to a notification or something happening on my screen. But with the laptop partially closed, I can still see those questions and have handy access to the cheat sheet. And so I actually used a few questions in exactly this way in a conversation in office this past week. So this was a pretty good now what time for me.
Oh, excellent. And I also really love the idea that you're using the coaching questions for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a fantastic reflective practice. And I was so interested that you had a couple questions that were speaking to you.
Yeah, unexpected, but great.
I will also add that you inspired me about all of this work, and I've downloaded The Coaching Habit.
Hooray.
And one of Michael's other books. And I've convinced my Coffee EDU friend, Jen, who I mentioned last week, to help facilitate a book study with me.
Oh, wow. Okay,
over
cool.
The book. And then the big connection was in one of the intro chapters, Michael even mentioned Gretchen Rubin and her habit formation.
So. Okay, good crossover.
Yeah.
I love that. Man, you are doing the most with the now what, so that sounds awesome. Gold star for you as well.
Well, we are inspiring each other to learn from.
You love to see it.
Yes. Okay, so before I share what's inspiring me, Laura, what's inspiring you this week? Do you have a quick win to share with us?
I do. Today, I want to share something from Common Sense Education called Digital Dilemmas. So I heard about this a week or so ago from an educator named Sarah Phelps during a session she was presenting in an online digital literacy conference that I was able to attend. And so basically, this is a document that contains several scenarios or digital dilemmas that they define as tricky situations that can occur in digital life, and they don't always have an obvious right or wrong answer. So they're categorized as either relational issues or civic issues, and there are like 8 or 9 dilemmas in each category. They're also really well written and relatable, and they don't have that kind of inauthentic feel that sometimes happens that sounds like an adult is trying to relate to students and their online lives, and it just isn't working. So each of these dilemmas is briefly explained, and then it's paired with a Project Zero thinking routine to facilitate conversation and have students process thinking. And so finally, there are four additional questions for each of the dilemmas that are labeled complicate questions, and they just serve to add layers and further complicate the dilemma and the surrounding conversation. And so what I like most about this is how easy to implement they've made it. It's recommended for use with students in 6th through 12th grade. And I know that right now, so many of our campuses have like a homeroom time or a built-in mm-hmm. tutoring intervention and extension period that's built into the day and often falls on that teacher to create an activity or some type mm-hmm. of curriculum to use during that time. So I think these would be perfect. They're already created, they're relevant, and they reinforce both digital literacy and SEL support. They get students talking, so win, win, win in my book.
Ooh, that sounds outstanding, Laura. And I know teacher friends will appreciate hearing about this. And when it's a ready-made packet with scenario and a protocol and some follow-up questions, yeah, you can't get any better than that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So would recommend check it out.
Okay, I will.
All right, so let's kind of move into the conversation. I am really excited to learn what it is that you have brought for us this week. And so as a reminder, we're using a reflective protocol to guide the conversation. And so for each episode's deep dive of learning, we're going to consider the what, so what, and now what as we share. So I've got to hear it. Catherine, what is inspiring you to learn this week?
Well, in keeping with our numbered frameworks, today I'm sharing a concept called plus one thinking, which is a framework for inclusive teaching.
Okay, let's pull up that famous timer then. And in 60 seconds or less, give us the gist. Tell us about plus one thinking.
Okay, so the idea of plus one thinking comes from Dr. Tom Tobin and his work with Universal Design for Learning, or UDL. Tom acknowledges the complexity of implementing UDL. So his idea is that for every interaction between a learner and something, either the instructor, the content, another learner, or the wider world, consider providing one additional option. So he calls his plus one mind step, step zero for UDL. And it really helps lessen educators or designers' feelings of overwhelm of trying to implement all aspects of UDL at once. So the plus one might be to offer one alternative method for presenting information, one new way of engaging learners, or adding choices on how learners show what they know. And Tom says that plus one thinking encourages us to, I'm going to be a rebel, encourages us to think about what barriers to learning our students are facing and how can we reduce or eliminate those barriers.
Ooh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm curious. This sounds like something I would be very much into and doable, so I love that as well. Let's go deeper. Tell us more and answer so what about plus one thinking that's inspiring you to learn.
Well, this will be no surprise, but I heard on a podcast about Tom Tobin's work, and shout out to the Teaching in Higher Ed podcast, which I've referenced at least two of our previous episodes. But in this episode, it was all about back to school, and the host theme was start small. And she mentioned this idea of plus one thinking, and I was immediately intrigued and then started my rabbit hole of learning. And first of all, I think that still so many of us are feeling the stress of doing too much. And so the idea of starting small is always a win in my book.
For sure, for sure.
And then the Teaching in Higher Ed host mentioned the plus one strategy came from the book Reach Everyone, Teach Everyone, Universal Design for Learning in Higher Ed. And so that really piqued my interest. I'm a bit late to the UDL game, but that's an area of growth for me. So that was just more encouragement for me to dig in. And there is a lot of connection between UDL and differentiated instruction, and mm-hmm. that's an area of interest for me. So I knew there would be some overlap. And then finally, some of our keywords from the past 2 years have been choice, autonomy, and agency. Mm-hmm. And UDL principles encompass all of those ideas. So check, check, check for lots of things to dig into.
Absolutely. I was already in, and then you said these magical phrases. I'm like, yep, yep, choice, mm-hmm. autonomy, agency, mm-hmm. tell mm-hmm. me more. So I'm so excited to dig deeper into this. Do you want to start by doing maybe an overview or refresher of universal design for learning mm-hmm. and give us a summary here?
Sure. So Universal Design for Learning, or UDL, I did not know this, first came from the architecture field, and then it was adapted by education. The best place to learn about UDL is cast.org, and they describe UDL as a framework to improve and optimize teaching and learning for all people based on scientific insights into how humans learn. So the UDL guidelines provide ways to have multiple means of, and there are three, engagement, which is how the learners move through and engage with the material and how they retain it. And that's really the why of the learning. Representation, that is how the information is presented. And that's usually what we think about in terms of differentiation. So thinking about the what of the learning. And then the third is action and expression. And that's how learners demonstrate mastery. So how they show what they know. If you look at the framework, there are three big categories: engagement, representation, action, and expression. Underneath those, there are three sections. And then each section has 3 to 4 indicators. So that is a lot. And so that's why I really love Tom Tobin's idea of plus one thinking to be step zero for UDL. Before you get into all the weeds and all the details, let's start small here.
I love that, because as you were continuing to explain more and more, I was feeling a bit of overwhelm.
Eyes glazing over.
a little bit. And so, yeah, I am really interested in this idea of plus one. How exactly does it fit into the UDL framework?
Well, Tom's perspective is first online design, and he primarily shares with higher ed, but don't let that stop you, because I think all of these principles are applicable to K-12 and adult learners. It works for all of us. Again, I also appreciate that Tom acknowledges how massive that UDL framework is, and if you're just getting started, like you just said, Laura, there's no way you can remember, are you looking at the affective networks or is this representation? And so his model asks you to start by focusing on interactions. How are my learners interacting with the content? And can I provide one more way for the learners to receive that content?
Ooh, I really like that word, interactions. I know we talk a lot about input and output, but this is a small tweak in phrasing that I'm like, ooh, I'm going to store that one away.
Yes, for sure. And so for an example, if I have a direct teach portion of my class or a PD session in our case, and so it's a lecture, what is one more way my learners can interact with that content? So can I include a copy of my slides? Or can I provide a note-taking document? Or can I do an audio recording of this? So in the UDL framework, this is multiple means of representation and possibly engagement. But I don't need to go back in a line to all of this. I just think about interactions with content. What am I doing? And then what's one more way? Tom's work says that UDL should be a service mindset, not a legal or guilt mindset. And he says, when we think about accessibility, we often think, I have to make this one change, such as adding captions or alt text, for one student for this one particular class. But UDL, on the other hand, can serve a lot of different people at different times. He says, if you think about including captions on your videos only for your hard of hearing students, that is this one tweak for my hard of hearing students for this one video. But then if students are language learners, the captions might be useful, or they could translate the captions. Or if a learner was in a public space and they forgot their headphones and they wanted to review the content, they could just read the captions on the video. So that is this connection of the UDL and thinking about it as a service mindset and not legality issue.
Ooh, that's a good mind shift as well. And also, shout out to me. I just love having everything having captions. And it's weird now, like if I go to the movies and I don't have captions because I'm just used to reading them. So I appreciate captions for no reason.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But yeah, no, I like that mind shift. And it is a shift. And I think I am slowly working through it, thinking about accessibility on my end of like, okay, I have to check, make sure I've done this instead of just beginning from the get-go, like, oh yeah, make sure that you have alt text. It's helpful for lots of people. And so, yeah, that's a good shift. Again, with that phrase that I really like of how people are interacting with the content.
Well, then what you said reminds me of our friend Juliana, who always talks about the importance of designing with accessibility in mind. And so start from the beginning. And the UDL principles are the same. It's so much easier to start from the ground up rather than retroactively trying to fit things in. If I'm thinking, how can I make my slides available as a note-taking guide, if I wanted to provide those, then maybe I want to think more carefully about the slide design and thinking about how could I add a little vocabulary on the slide without being too overwhelming, but how could support people who were downloading the slides as well. Another connection that I wanted to share and loved is my understanding of differentiated instruction and how an idea that I've heard from Carol Ann Tomlinson, who describes differentiation as proactive teaching. Dr. Tomlinson talks about differentiated instruction is to plan for the unexpected. So if you've taught the same course or the same subject for a long time, in our case, Laura, if you've repeated your compassionate coaching webinar several times, you know where there are going to be questions and stumbles and missed assessment questions. Tom Tobin calls these your pinch points. And this is where he also suggests you start with your plus one thinking. And that's exactly where differentiated instruction says is this proactive teaching. You know where there are going to be stumbles. And so that's your entry point to differentiation. If you know learners always ask you to repeat a process, then that's where you could start by making a video to possibly explain something in a different way. Or if you have a colleague who teaches the same subject, maybe you each make a video of this pinch point and then your learners can watch your friend's video.
Ooh, I like this.
And then another suggestion he had was even have the students make a video about the process. So that's this idea of proactive teaching or watching for those pinch points and another place of starting small. Don't look at everything in your curriculum, but just focus on those little pieces. And that's where you make those plus one moves.
Another good phrase that I like here and kind of eating up some mental capacity in my brain right now. I'm thinking through my compassionate coaching webinars and like, ooh, where can I add some of this plus one thinking as people interact with content? Okay.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And so let me add to your thinking. Tom points out that UDL is more than just good teaching. His distinction is that it's intentional teaching and design. And intentional has been one of our other bingo words.
Absolutely. We are filling up that bingo card today. Good job.
Right. He gives an example of a professor who was completely overwhelmed because he recorded every lecture, captioned the videos, created transcripts, and then uploaded everything. And that was because the professor's like, I have to do this for legal reasons. And Tom's question for plus one thinking. So if you're starting small, which is more useful and more intentional, captions or a transcript?
Okay.
If you don't have to do both. If you are demonstrating a science experiment, captions are probably more important because you want to see the actions on the screen and you want to see exactly this occurs. You're pouring this chemical into this at this point. However, if your video is an interview, then it's possible you need to just have a transcript and then people could read the discussion between the panel or the interviewee.
I like the logic behind this and the reassurance of not getting overwhelmed and like, I have to do this and this and this and this, and really just thinking, okay, what makes the most sense? And so hearing these things, I'm feeling my rising shoulders just going down and thinking like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense and is intentional, which yes, is a word that I love to overuse, but also really think about. So, okay.
Well, and then Laura, thinking back to those pinch points and starting small, I think you're so good at this strategy because you always have an FAQ document. And that is a perfect way to address those common questions that you've had. And everything is in one place. And you have probably responded to the same questions over and over. So providing that FAQ document is probably saving some time. You don't have to respond to all those emails because the questions are already there. So that's another possibility of addressing the pinch points, not just providing answers to everything repeated four times, but just what you've heard over and over again. A couple of other things that I'm remembering and making connections is this idea of starting small also reminded me of one of our favorite posts by Dr. Catlin Tucker, where she talks about choice in the terms of this or that.
Yes.
She had the Would You Rather post. And so would you rather read the article or listen to it? Tom talks a lot about, again, just plus one thing. Don't ask learners to show what you know in any format that you choose. Just give them one additional option. So not creating a crazy rubric for everything that they have to turn in, but just starting with that one option.
Ooh, that is really smart because I feel a little called out. I know that as a teacher and as a facilitator of professional learning, I have heard myself say that many times, like, I don't know, use anything you want to, like, show me what you know. And then when it comes to me to give feedback, I didn't really think that through of like, oh, okay, well, sure, I will watch this video or listen to this audio clip or read this thing. And so, yeah, this is making a lot of sense of just adding one additional way. And also not overwhelming students. I think lots of times our students kind of have that choice paralysis. And so that's why the this or that is also one of my favorite posts of it's very concrete. Do you want to read the article or do you want to listen to it? And it's not overwhelming in showing what you know in like any format in the world. So, okay, that really makes sense.
Well, and I think adult learners have that same paralysis too. You know, it's just like, here, you can do anything for the next 15 minutes and narrow those choices, give them some constraints, but also then that lessens our burden of thinking about all the possible options, just one.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so one other bonus idea, and shout out Readwise from almost every episode in the past. This quote popped in my feed recently, and it's from the book Intention by Dan Ryder and Amy Burval. And I think it's another nod to the importance of providing choice and UDL. It says, by choosing a medium that plays to the strengths, speaking of student strengths, the barrier to communicating understanding is lowered, and the analysis becomes the focus rather than the stress of expressing it. And as a bonus, you get to experience a little bit of variety in the assessment process. Mm-hmm. If the student knows that they love to draw and you give them the choice, you can do a visual, mm-hmm. then they can focus on just that drawing and the content, not the tool or not the format. Mm-hmm. So I liked that little connection too about how the students benefit from this UDL practice. But then I also like that it's addressing the teachers. You get mm-hmm. to see a little variety in mm-hmm. what's turned in.
Absolutely. Well, I will make a connection to something we talk about all of the time as well, is the new pillars of modern teaching. Gail Allen, and thinking about looking for those opportunities for choice in time, place, mm-hmm. medium, and socialness. Mm-hmm. And so I think that quote that you just read would pair really nicely. And so I'm going to have to bookmark that and use it when talking about medium and choice. So mm-hmm.
good.
Nice connection there, too. Ooh, okay. Well, you've given me lots of good things to think about. And again, maybe a list of new phrases to add to my vocabulary. Is there anything else about this topic that you want to share that you haven't yet?
Yes, and I'm especially excited to share this piece in one of the articles I found, which was an interview about the book, Reach Everyone, Teach Everyone. Tom's co-author, Kirsten Bailing, mentioned using the plus one mindset when working with faculty members, and she didn't use the word coaching in this conversation, but that's exactly what it reminded me of. We've had so many conversations about coaching, mm-hmm. and her example was working with higher ed faculty, but again, thinking of anyone.
Right, right.
If someone perceives that their work is going well or their course is going well, you discuss, yes, yay, that's going well. And then you make a plus one suggestion for adding yet another flexible learning path. Mm-hmm. And I love this strategy, especially thinking about coaching veterans or mm-hmm. thinking about our consultants who are master teachers mm-hmm. or experts in their subject area. And so I thought this approach was a terrific layer to add to coaching conversations mm-hmm. and then ways to improve our own practice. Just like you said, Laura, okay, I've got this webinar. I'm completely confident about this. You've done it a couple of times. What is one more way I can change in interactions?
I love this so much. Mm-hmm. It is so manageable. I think it is a great, not even, like, I think it is a great entry point into UDL, but I think just a great, I'm going to use the word manageable again, way to just improve our own practice and mm-hmm. make those tweaks in a way that is not too much. Mm-hmm. And this name plus one explains it so well. And so not having time or even really the desire to like redo this webinar or redo this thing mm-hmm. that's working, but giving myself that challenge that will benefit all of the learners as well to just make one tweak and plus one. Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yay, good.
Okay. So as you know, another idea that we are practicing is to use each of our episodes as a place to launch further thinking, and we want to challenge each other to apply what we share as we consider now what. Also, we've set a pretty high bar for ourselves this season already. We're doing pretty well with these now whats. So high bar. But now what with this? What are some next steps from here? How might you incorporate ideas from plus one thinking into your work or further your own learning?
Since the pandemic, I feel my mindset has really started to move from accessibility legal focused to service oriented. And I really want to go back to that description in this work and hopefully continue to grow in this area. So that is just a mindset shift, which I don't think can be documented by next week, but that's just an area of growth. Yeah. And we're both always working on inclusivity and belonging. And I know belonging was one of your themes from the summer, Laura. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking an area where I want to focus is on learner to learner interactions. Mm. So in my mind, that is collaboration. Mm-hmm. So how can I add an additional method for collaborating? Mm. Now, Laura, we're working on an upcoming in real life presentation, like for next week. So I hope that we'll be able to think about this as we're planning for this next session. Okay. And so, yes, once again, I'm tricking you into helping me with the now what.
I'm hearing it happen. We're like, by the way, now let's do this. But luckily, it's a great idea and I think a great challenge. So, okay, we'll have to work on that and report back.
Okay. We'd also like to extend the invitation to you, dear listener, to share your ongoing story of learning as well. Take a moment to pause and think wherever you're listening from and consider, what ideas have you heard today that have sparked your interest and inspired further learning about plus one thinking? You may also find us on Twitter at DigLearnRadio to continue the conversation and share your own learning that's inspiring you this week.
This season, we're dedicated to sharing our learning and the things that are inspiring us. We hope that when we share, the conversation and ideas will cultivate curiosity and inspire you to explore one of the resources, reflect on a question we've asked, or continue the conversation with us online. Reflect to consider the what, so what, and now what of your thinking. Share your learning inspirations and ideas from this episode and beyond. We are, as ever, inspired to learn from Gail Allen and her work in the New Pillars of Modern Teaching. She reminds us that when we share, we add a sentence to the story we communicate about ourselves to the world. Let's continue learning, sharing, and transforming. Let's get inspired.